Hi Sandra, you wanted to think a bit about heavy metals in the body. And essentially, there's a lot of misunderstanding about it, I think. Because heavy metals, of course, are a part of the atomic elements. The metals are the electric conducting part of the periodic table, so to say. There are many elements which have a lot to do with electricity. In fact, all of the atoms are, of course, protons, neutrons, and electrons. So in some way, they will always interact with the electromagnetic fields. And the core of understanding the toxicity of heavy metals in our body is that, as Yukio Omura said, they are antennae. Maybe I best start with the story which he told me at one of the conferences where we met. Because he had been doing research on Alzheimer and discovered that if you're within 3 years of onset of Alzheimer and you do a chelation to take out the heavy metals and then do an antimicrobial treatment to get out the microbes and virus, then the Alzheimer can disappear. The explanation for that is quite simple. When heavy metals accumulate in the body, and he looked specifically in the brain, then they work as an antenna field. Because of their conductivity, the electromagnetic field around them will be turned into electricity within them. You could say that outside of matter it is magnetism, inside of matter it is electricity. Of course, inside of matter, the electricity results from the flow of electrons. The electrons are part of the atoms, but due to the electromagnetic current, which you could also say is part of the quantum currents, in the metals and in other materials too, a current will arise, which will mean that it works as a local antenna, which means that it has a local antenna field around it. The antenna field around it is most often in the handbooks of antennae technology drawn as leaves, like leaves of plants. And that means that around these electromagnetic antenna, the electric field is changed. And of course, in the electromagnetic antennae, these heavy metal particles, the ongoing ambient electromagnetic field will keep on producing a current, and that will keep on producing a magnetic electromagnetic field around them. And that means that there's an electromagnetic vibrational state in that region. And if there is aluminium in the brain, that is where the field will be. And so superimposed on what the body is doing, because the cells, of course, are working electromagnetic fields, there is the metals or heavy metals with their localized antennae, which is a bit like having a crying baby in a symphony orchestra. This disturbs this information processing of the brain, which means that with the screeching, a lot of the brain process cannot function properly. It's a bit what you see in the body as well. When people have stored traumatic experiences, which are stored in the body as a kind of circular current, an eddy current, so to say, and then in that area, the cells are working with everything the body is doing, but also they are subject to that circulation of information which is stored, say, hidden under the carpet of the mind of the one living in the body or using the body. And as a result, the cells in that area can no longer communicate well. And as Lieke Geert Hamer showed, that's where the cancers then can emerge, because the cells can no longer synchronize. They fall back on their fallback protocol, or their underlying rhythm, and unstoppable continue to grow, which is called a cancer. But at the moment that this signal communication is stored, as Lieke Geert Hamer says, you need to eliminate the traumatic experiences, nourish the cells with proper food, get rid of disturbances in the overall electromagnetic field. People who let themselves be influenced too much by others are processing information of others within them, so the body cannot process that properly, and that contributes to the cancer formation. So there you have a kind of interference with information processing in the body, Yokiyamura described for the brain. And in the brain, then, that dysfunctionality is known, amongst other things, one of the names for what happens then is Alzheimer's. Part of the story that needs to bridge the understanding to a different direction is that of Phil Callahan. He wrote a book, Antennae in Nature, and he walked the fields with a little voltmeter so that he could measure the 11 centimeter frequencies, if there was a harmony on the agricultural fields or not, and has he had established in areas where there are wars, the fields don't have the proper frequency. So that might mean that the people who eat that food are disordered internally and prone to war. Some might say that the memory of the war actually changed the field, because there is research in Australia, I forget the name of the guy who did it, Rangers, something. He measured what happens when the farmers walk across the field and noticed that there where the farmer walks, there is a different group of microbes in the soil. So when we interact with the land, the land responds to that. Phil Callahan studied these relationship between electromagnetic fields and insects, and an insect antenna is literally an electromagnetic antenna. So he discovered that, for example, the Florida highways had a lot of difficulties with the trucks getting their windows covered with bugs. And then he established that one of the molecules in the diesel fumes that the trucks emitted was a pheromone for those bugs. So they actually came to Lover's Lane to be crashed on the windscreen. And Phil Callahan noticed in general that our sense of smell is actually the vibration of the molecules on our nose. So on the nose, you have the molecular association. On the tongue, you have the molecular dissociation, so that the body knows what to do with these molecules. And he noted that the frequencies that, in fact, are associated with what we smell is in the infrared range. The scope is wider, but that's one of the conclusions out of that. And he also noted that with these frequencies, bugs can feed on that. So there are radar wavelengths which feed microbes, feed insects, flying insects, because their carapaces work as a dish antenna, and their antennae work as antennae, so they can actually fuel on those radar frequencies, which are in the beacon of the air fields, to guide the airplanes coming in. But then when the bugs are there, the birds come there, then the airplane comes there, and then the crash comes there. So there was good reason for him to look into that, but also his more general finding that all kind of organisms thrive on different kind of frequencies. Of course, Royal Raymond Rife looked at that a bit closer when he was looking at the viral disturbances in the body, which he discovered is often the case under cancer. And then he discovered that if he could measure the length, the size of the virus, which with his special microscope he could, then he knew which length he had to match as the wavelength of a radio transmitter, emitter. And as a result, like Nicaruso singing a wine glass to pieces by singing the same pitch as the wine glass vibrates by itself, Royal Raymond Drive could get rid of these fighters. As a result of which, I think it was 116 or 124 cases, the cancer would disappear. So there is that direct connection between microorganisms and vibrations. And one of the people who looked into that in a different way was Rosalyn Briere, who worked with Valerie Hunt. When Valerie Hunt was looking for the electrophysiology of people, and specifically the changes of the body electromagnetism, as she measured the electricity, the electrical conductivity in the muscles, before and after, during people being massaged. And she had Rosalyn Briere, a clairvoyant, with her. And it turned out that when Rosalyn Briere clairvoyantly saw a color of red come out of the people while they were being massaged, that Valerie Hunt could actually measure the red in the Fourier component of what she could measure in the muscles. So then there is a direct connection between bioelectricity, emotional states, colors in the body, which we can now also connect to the microbes, with what Phil Callahan then had introduced, that microwave radiation can actually be a nutrient for microorganisms. And that is what Yokio Omura had found, that around the heavy metals in the brain, clusters of microbes could grow. So I needed this sidestep to help understand why that can be. And the consequence, of course, is that in the brain, then it's not just that there are fields of disturbing frequencies, the crying baby in the symphony orchestra, but also that there is a completely different bioorganism culture in the brain. It is as if in the garden there is the weeds growing because people had dumped garbage somewhere. So with this understanding, it is evident that any heavy metal or metals in the body in general can cause a disturbance. Of course, there is also these findings that people who have metal in their body because of prosthesis, hip replacements or dental work, they sometimes hear radio in their body or in their head. It's because there is a resonance to that frequency of a specific radio station, and then they just happen to be attuned by the metals that they have in the body to that frequency, as a result of which it resonates in their body. So I basically would like to leave it at that. Heavy metals, of course, need to be generalized. Maybe I should not just leave it at that. Heavy metals, by their chemistry, of course, can be reactive in many different ways. And it is not just that they respond to radio signals, but they can also respond to other radio wave signals. And as at the moment, people forget the caution that you should not put your head in a microwave oven, the whole body is now bathed in microwave radiation. They used to call it electrosmog. They no longer talk about that because actually the electro fog has gone so thick as what in London they would call the pea soup. In London it was because of the peat fuel polluting the air. But in our environment it's because of the different forms of radio frequencies polluting the atmosphere. So of course if there are more frequencies, more directed frequencies, with 5G, everybody is at the center of a series of radio beams. And of course, it is well known that that is the way in which radiotherapists, beware of that name, are using radio rays from the different directions to kill cells in the body. So if you're holding your phone and there are three radio masts zapping you with, say, directed light beams, but then in radio wave frequencies, your body is the focus of those directed beams. So what's the difference there and what the radiotherapist does? Principle is the same. The frequencies are different somewhat, but the body cell response is still the same. Because the other side of the story, of course, is that body cells communicate using electromagnetic signals. And with the way the body works, the cells are able to form and transform molecules in a very precise manner. They do that by using linear and rotational quantum flux so that they can slice and splice molecules by the linear quantum flux, and they can rotate the molecule parts with the rotational quantum flux, and in that way can reorganize what happens. So the level of biochemistry is actually not chemical at all. If you look at chemistry, then you can see that's actually electric at its foundation. Materials, of course, are made of molecules. Molecules are made of atoms. Atoms are made of pluses, minuses, and zeros, protons, neutrons, protons, electrons, and neutrons. And that means that at the atomic level, everything is purely electromagnetic. And at that level, there's a direct interaction between electromagnetic fields and atomic interactivity or atomic reactions. For an electron to move in an atom, there needs to be a photon displacement, which comes from the quantum field. As Tetriolnik shows, the photon is not a particle, but the photon is a waveform, a coherent waveform in the quantum field. That means that at the basis, the universe is a quantum field. It then interacts at the atomic level. There is a subatomic particle level, which is fascinating and intense and dense. But Western science doesn't look much at that. So they start looking at the atomic level, where you have the protons, neutrons, and electrons, and then there are as many protons and neutrons as the Z number of the atom, but the number of electrons is coupled to that, with the difference that the electron can lodge and dislodge as a result of electromagnetic fields. So at the atomic level, the changes in electromagnetic activity of the atoms is determined by the quantum field, the information field, and the universal vibrational field. That then changes the way atoms can relate to each other, and they can actually, at the moment, an electron jump in an atom that can be connected to an electron jump in another atom, as a result of which these atoms can form molecules. And when molecules are formed, the electron jumps within atoms are perceived as electron flow within the molecules. So that's where you then see how the quantum field fluctuations result in chemical changes in the molecules, because the chemical affinity or binding capacity is based on how the electron flow can take place. At the moment that molecules can connect up in such a way that the electron flow stabilizes itself, then it's called the level of the bound electrons, they will become inert. They will become fixed matter. And at that level, you can then see that there is a relationship between the physics of fixed matter with the bound electrons, the chemistry of the electron flow in the molecules, the electron jump, which is electromagnetic in the atoms, and then at the deepest level, as Tetrionics explains, the quantum field. When you have atoms which can form molecules which are sort of like matter, those are the crystalline atomic structures, then the electromagnetic properties are thereby determined. So gems and metals, they have properties of locking electrons in place or allowing for an electron flow. And these are then properties used to insulate electric currents or to conduct electric currents. The electric currents is essentially how the electron dynamic in the materials can take place. So when materials are combined, that actually creates a kind of computational system. Computers or radio systems are based on a condenser, which is capacity to store something, to store flow, or do it in the parallel, to store electrons like the material substance. The coil is where you can actually have a flow, a current, like in the molecules. The resistor is where you can have a transformation of a volt into ampere, of tension into a current, which is comparable to the electron jump in the atoms. So when you look at the radio diagrams of the elements by which they build radios and computers, you can see that the condenser, the coil, and the resistor, together with the switch, which is like the quantum field, actually represent the relationship between matter, molecules, atoms, and the quantum state. So the condenser is, say, the material storage capacity. The coil is the molecular electron flow. The resistor is the atomic electron jump level to shift the amount of electrons flowing, yes or no. And the switch actually turns things on and off in that material circuit. In a more generalized sense, you can say that the condenser stands for space, material structure. The coil stands for chemistry, the molecular process. The resistor stands for energy, the atomic electromagnetics. And the switch, of course, that's where we get in, this is where consciousness comes in, quantum space. So when you understand that, and when you understand that the same happens, but there it's determined by the availability, as it's called, of electrons, then it's easy to see that when you have materials which are great conductors, say they're in the time domain, like the metals, or they're great insulators, they're in the space domain, like the condensers, then there are also materials which in that catalytic atomic domain have the radioactive and also the catalytic kind of atoms, which means that at the atomic level, everything can happen. What can happen when you use radio diagram elements? So you can actually understand that atoms are computer elements, and it's determined by how you combine them, what kind of atomic level circuit you have. So this is not nanotechnology, this is atomic technology, where at the level of the atoms you can build mini circuits. Of course, nature has been doing that for a very long time. The universe is based on that technology which nature uses. Our body actively uses that and interacts with it. So our body actually knows which atoms to use for which specific space-time energy consciousness combination, the four dimensions of our existence, are then exemplified in each atom. And the cells are able to compose and compute how these atoms are pulled together. But that relies on a specific kind of interaction with the environment, had the natural interaction of solar radiation, cosmic radiation, planetary dynamic, earth dynamics, the dynamics of nature and the seasons, and of course the processes of the body and the mind. And that is all carefully balanced over the past billions of years. And so when things start to interfere with that, the same takes place in our environment as when heavy metals are incorporated in our brain, or when traumatic experiences become stored in our body, in nature and atmosphere around us, suddenly there are areas which are unnatural. They do not form part of the complex of harmonic, let's say holographic, frequencies which define the coherence of the reality as we know it. And instead, just as the heavy metal antennae in the brain disturb the mental function and the traumatic memories in the body can interfere with bodily functioning, then these radio technologies and the corresponding artificial chemistry technologies interfere with nature. And essentially, all of that is based on a lack of understanding of how our cells work with atomic materials and actually use and combine atomic elements in what we can then call the biomolecules. And evidently, there's a very strict logic for that, which chemistry and biochemistry don't understand, because they're still looking at physical molecules with chemical reaction, while the body is working with the information and the transformation capacities of these molecules. When the cells communicate, they use the molecules as physical structure, as chemical catalyst, as electromagnetic messages, and also as photonic information switchers. And you can see that the protein is physical, the enzyme is chemical, the hormone is electromagnetic, and the pigment works in the light domain. Likewise, the body cells make materials. They produce and position materials which very much rely on these electromagnetic properties as well. So the materials are piezoelectric, they're liquid crystal, they're transducer transponder, they're intelligent gels, which means that they all respond to changes in the information field, changes in the quantum field. The piezoelectric, if you have a cloud of electrons impinging on it, it will stretch. When you compress it, the electrons come out. That's what is used in many of the lighters, where you create a spark. The liquid crystal, everybody now has screens in their homes, and that's where the electricity makes that the material goes liquid or solid, depending on what kind of flow of electricity there is. The transistor is based on how much charge there is, and that determines where the electron flow in the material will go, or also the other way around. Intelligent gel, the information field can actually form the materials, and the other way around. So when the cells are working with these materials, both in the communication and both in the material by which they communicate, connect to each other. So the materials by which they communicate, the materials by which they connect, are all part of the ongoing computation in which every cell is a CPU, a central processing unit. So our whole body is 30 trillion interconnected computer CPUs, which together can process holographic information. Which does mean that it can go faster than light, because they're not bound by the speed of light, because they can, by being connected, that's called the isophase vector field, they form a group velocity. So they can respond as a whole. And by that holographic computation, of course, then they can compute how they transform the molecules that the cells produce. And in the liver cell, you can see that they do different things than in the spleen or in the kidneys. In the kidneys, you can actually see that there is an electromagnetic field which allows atoms to go through, and then another electromagnetic field pulls some of the atoms back in. And so we cannot look at our body as if it is a physical anatomical object. We can certainly not look at the body as if it is a bag of chemistry, the physiology. And so in that sense, we must scrap from to don't do that properly. It's not due to lack of molecules, but that there is a disturbance in the body by which the selection of the proper kind of molecules is disturbed. Sometimes it can be that there is a lack of trace elements, the less frequently used atoms in the nutrients that the body uses. But more often it is that in the electromagnetic information processing, some of these materials have been used too much, as a result of which they cannot be sufficiently recycled internally. In that context, always think of the breatharians who don't eat, so they don't get molecules and atoms coming in from outside. What they get from the air and from the water. And yet they are fully functional. It means that in our body there is that capacity to work with the molecules and recycle them in a very stringent manner. And out of that you can then understand that our body is not based on anatomy. The anatomy is consequential to the physiology. Our body is not a chemical reaction because the physiology is based on the neurocrine, the electromagnetic information communication center. It's called neurocrine because the neurons are like the telegraph wires and the hormones are like the parcel messenger service. But the parcels, the hormones, are actually information too. They're letters. So both of them are electromagnetic level communications, which means that the whole physiology is determined by the neurocrine electromagnetic communication network. And in the same way, anatomy is based on the physiology. And if the anatomy is doing something funny, new, strange, unknown, then in the physiology something has changed. But likewise, if in the physiology something has changed, that means in the neurocrine and the information processing level, at the electromagnetic level, something has changed. The neurocrine, however, is where we have the psychosomatic engine operating. It is the neurons and the hormones are only part of that story. So when medical doctors say it's the neurocrine system, they forget that all of the molecules in the body and all of the body materials are actively part of that also. So connective tissues are part of that electric information communication system. The body fluids are part of that electromagnetic information communication system. Bjørn Nordenstrøm, he handed out the Nobel Prize for Medicine. He should have gotten one himself. He discovered that in our body, these electromagnetic currents are fundamental, and he called it infonars for the information communication, ergonars for the energy activation. So the ergonars are, say, connected to the electric engines, and the infonars are connected to the telephony information communication. But there is a deeper level yet, because when we look at the anatomy as the material and the physiology as the molecular, then the neurocrine level is the electromagnetic, the atomic. Then we know that underneath that, there is the tetrionic quantum field, which is pure information. And it is all about the processing of information in our body and by our body. So that is where we can then generalize the understanding that anything that will interfere with the information will have consequences on how the electromagnetic dynamics of the body can make the discerning decisions on integrating or disintegrating within our environment. But when chemical toxins interfere with that electromagnetic process, or when heavy metals interfere with that electromagnetic process, it is like the moth eating the carpet, the tapestry on your wall. It creates a leaky kind of non-coherent kind of information processing. Bits and pieces drop out, as a result of which the physiology gets derailed, can be derailed, and as a result of that, the anatomy can be derailed. But most often, the effects at the level of the anatomy, which is the material level, are much slower. The body chemistry is based on the circulation of material, which is the counterpart of the circulation of electrons in the molecules. So at that level, processes have a time scale. Actually, like the coil in the electromagnetic circuits, where the condenser is associated with space, the coil is associated with time, and the resistor is associated with energy, the switch is associated with consciousness. At the level of the physics, we are dealing with spatial structures, spatial organization, spatial coherence. At the level, that's the anatomy. At the level of the physiology, we're dealing with the temporal organization, time cycles, feedforward feedback loops, interconnecting loops, harmonics of loops, loops with time duration. And that's why in the physiology, where we know it takes, for example, 72 days to produce sperm, at 28.53 days for the lunar cycle, for the menstrual cycle, there are all kinds of circadian rhythms in our body. Some of them are very fast, but some of them are much slower. And that's also the reason why astrology is so relevant, because you need to understand that these slower processes are part of our body functioning. And if you ignore them, then you will not see when the high tide comes in, together with the raging storm of that moment of the emotional activation. And suddenly, say of course, I'm speaking from the Netherlands now, then the dams will flood over. And in that sense, the physiology is much faster than the anatomy, but still there are very long-range time processes in that. So it could take a while before you noticed that in the physiology there is something not quite right. That's where in Eastern medicine they have the finger on the pulse to check what these rhythms are, what these time cycles are. And in Chinese medicine they go one level deeper. They look at how the attunement is of these cycles within their environment, because at that electromagnetic level, when things are out of kilter there, that is at light speed. And that's where the electromagnetic connections go into the atomic changes. The electrons can jump in the atoms, which can cause a new electron current in the molecules. In the body, all of these molecules are interconnected and interlinked. So that initiates a new, say, software current in the body, as a result of which the fixation of electrons in the body changes. So our whole body is an alchemical vessel where earth, water, air, and fire, solid, liquid, gas, and plasma are connected for the simple reason that bound electrons, electron flows, electron jumps, and photon jumps are logically interconnected. Our cells compute that, our body responds to that. But when things happen at the electromagnetic level, And there are toxins in there, heavy metals are toxin. This is because they interfere with the electromagnetic field, but the electromagnetic field is actually only in part an energy current. So only part of it serves to drive a motor, so to say. And the other part, which is the much more important part, is the information flow. So at the moment that the information is chewed up by the moths, it is not possible to expect that the body can do its proper computations. So in a sense, you then need to take the body offline. And what we need at the moment is a kind of shift in consciousness, where, let's say, it would be possible to initiate a deep trance so that the cells can stop doing what they're doing in the outer world. We always do that in the sleep cycle. We go from the outer world to the body level, to the organ level, to the cell level. I've described that elsewhere. So that the cells can stop being concerned with what happens outside and can instead do a self-check, check where toxic materials are in the body, compute how the information circulation is gone awry, doesn't work anymore, so that they can unhitch that, detect where the heavy metals are, and then use a metabolic process to get the heavy metals out of the system. That means a kind of electromagnetic anti-peristalsis. When you vomit, that's called anti-peristalsis. The gut has a dynamic which goes from mouth to anus, but sometimes something goes into the gut and the body then has to reverse the direction of the flow, so that instead of pulsing it towards the exit, it pulses it back towards the entrance, so that the body can reject it. We need to find a way to have the body reject these kind of toxic inclusions into the body, which evidently needs to go to a deeper level of consciousness. The body level is where we normally have our identification. Only trained yogis can do an anti-peristalsis. Actually, the yogis then can sit in the river and suck in the water from their anus and then clean out the colon so that they can recalibrate the microbial balance and expel the colon contents again. And so they can do quite a number of processes at the physiological level. There's some who can stop their heart by actually increasing the frequency of the pulsation until everything jitters. And there are many other examples which have also been discovered, not just in yogis, but also people who were in deep trance or somehow were able to shift to that level. But there is a deeper level, not the body level that we normally work with, the organ level that the yogis can work with, but the cellular level. So we need to find a way to do a cleansing at the cellular level. Well, medical doctors don't get that kind of training, and they're actually trained to not be very open to other kind of learning which do have that kind of insight. So you best look for yourself what you can find. But of course, when we sleep, we go from the outer world to the body world, to the organ world, to the cellular world. And when you become aware of what happens in your body, and that's done in meditation, deep meditation, you can also approximate, get closer to these deeper levels where you can then have the cells recompute how they connect to each other. So they're not busy with the outer world. They're not busy with the food or the information that they're processing, but they can go to the level of the information that they're processing, calibrate the information which they have, let go of information which doesn't work. That's also why people in deep meditation suddenly discover that old trauma comes by and they can release that. They're working at that electromagnetic information storage level. And then what is sought essentially is that the cells can reconnect to the quantum space, which is what's called Satori in the say deep religions, the deep understanding of how we connect to the universe. But that's not something which is taught in school. So let me leave it at that. I started with having some reflections on limitations of understanding of metals. They're not just chemical or electromagnetic. I skipped on the whole part of atomic recombination using metallic atoms and combining it with the other atoms to get create highly specific kind of information processing materials. Instead, I went into the way that electromagnetic fields play a direct role in nature, with the antennae in nature, also in microbial systems, also in cellular systems. I talked about the way cells work with quantum linear flux, quantum rotational flux, to actually be able to slice and splice molecules and making the molecules for their connection, but also the molecules for the communication. I explained how all of that is at the electromagnetic level, and that that is like a harmonic or symphonic internal process, and anything that interferes with that can become problematic. So I briefly addressed that when people created electromagnetic radio systems, which are artificial, and chemistry, which is artificial, that doesn't compute with what the body knows what to do, and so it can interfere with the body. That is easily seen in the great number of chronic diseases that have emerged since radio waves were introduced, and the varieties of diseases that came up since artificial chemistry was introduced. So we now have to learn to detoxify our environment and our body from that. And the conclusion is basically that we cannot do that at the material level. It's not a physical problem. We cannot really do that at the chemical level. Yes, we need to stop producing these chemistries, need to stop producing the radio waves, which are not biocompatible. We actually need to get a better understanding of what happens at the atomic level, the electromagnetic body, the electromagnetic body dynamics, where the cells as CPUs work with holographic information processing. That's not just happening in the brain, it's happening all of the body, every cell participates. But then the end conclusion is we need to fully understand how the cells is actually the inverse of the universe, and that it is at the level of the connection of the cell within the universe that the cell and the body as a whole, remember that the body originated from the first cell, the zygote. And so we can always talk about and the cell and the body in the same cell terminology, as long as the hologram of the body is preserved. And that is probably the core of the issue. The first cell is the universe in inverse, very literally. And when the hologram unfolds, the whole body is still the universe in inverse. You can see that in babies. But the more people accumulate muck within them, the less the holographic coherence is maintained. And what we actually need to find out now is a way to restore that holographic integrity of our body and of humanity in nature and in the universe. Let me just leave it at that.